Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:26 p.m. and today is June 1st, and it is Central Time. So I thought it was interesting today that it was a number of Chinese shares were the better performers on the Nasdaq, and Pinduoduo was up about 10%. But it's the commonality across the Chinese tech sector that I think is particularly notable, because it's had a deep correction over the course of the last 4 months. And not for any reason, but for a good reason, that the government is weighing down on these tech companies because they're afraid of how much control they're beginning to exert on the population. But we have started to see that Chinese shares generally have picked up. So when we think about the CSI 300, well, it's been consolidating in the region of the previous peaks and bounced pretty emphatically last week and followed through on the upside in here today. So this is positive action overall. We can then think about some of the bigger companies that have been most susceptible to opprobrium from the administration in China. And Alibaba, for example, has bounced as well from the $200 level. It's still below its trend mean, whereas Tencent is now bouncing pretty impressively from the region of the trend mean. Then we can think about the H-share index. Obviously, the measures that have been deployed over the last 18 months to bring Hong Kong back under control have raised eyebrows all over the world. But the H-share index has been really ranging now for a decade, and I think doing so in a rather volatile fashion. But the more important point is that it has now broken the 3-year downtrend. It's found support in the region of the trend mean, whereas moves above it over the course of the last 3 years have failed. It's now bouncing from that area, so that is positive. Then, of course, there is the value argument for the H-share index, where the estimated PE is about 10 and it yields 2.5%. That's and I think the Chinese market is starting to attract foreign investors for a simple reason, and it's because the renminbi is getting stronger. But we did see measures in here today to try and weaken the renminbi, but not in an especially dynamic manner. We've certainly seen bigger interventions from the Chinese in the past. So they want to arrest the advance of the currency, but perhaps not to completely derail it. And there is certainly a willingness to tolerate a weaker currency, or excuse me, a stronger currency, because of the upward pressure that we're seeing on commodity prices. And commodity prices remain really quite firm. Now, when we think about the oil price, well, we had OPEC in here today saying that they're going to hold onto their intention to increase supply in a gradual fashion. Then investors are also looking at the outcome of the negotiations with Iran, and I think it's rather cynical, but it's unfortunately probably true, that all of the unrest in the Middle East over the last 2 or 3 weeks has expressly been at the behest of Iran, and used as a negotiation tactic to try and get sanctions reduced and opening up their quota in OPEC once more. The price of oil, though, is right in the region of $70, and it's at the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last 3 months. It's a broad uptrend overall, and really a clear downward dynamic would be required to check potential for an additional pop on the upside and a retest of the $80 area. It's still a reasonably bullish environment, and not least because the hurdle to invest in additional new supply continues to get higher because of the additional costs that are being imposed upon the energy sector. Energy today is in the same kind of situation that banks were in the aftermath of the credit crisis. So they were facing a wall of new regulation. They had to hire umpteen numbers of compliance people and middle office administrators, and all that resulted in was higher costs overall. It doesn't mean that a decade later banks aren't in a stronger position overall, but it was a long time out in the wilderness, and perhaps we'll see something similar from the energy sector, because from about 2008 on to about 2012, we had this lengthy range, and finally we started to see some easing up, and certainly with the beginning of interest rate hikes, then the banks started to do better. They came up with new business models. They were able to charge for new services, and now they are firing on all cylinders again. And we can think that back in 2009, I don't think anyone was expecting that the S&P 500 banks index would be at new all-time highs in little more than a decade. Of course, the big players from back then are not the ones that are making new highs, but nonetheless, Citigroup has clearly broken out of its base formation, and haha, that is corn. So I do apologize for that. I do want to talk about corn. It was at the back of my head. Now, that is certainly something Freudian in nature. When we look at Citigroup, it collapsed in 2007 and 8, and it has just about come up to the upper side of its base formation without, in fact, breaking out. Now let's go look at corn, because we've seen a lot of activity in the agricultural sector in here today because of the announcement of that hack on JBS in Brazil. So that's knocked out some of their processing facilities in North America and Australia. And this is just another example of the supply chain disruptions that we're seeing. Some of them because of the pandemic, but increasingly not just because of the pandemic. The I guess piracy is really the only way to describe what's going on right now. And the big difference between the piracy on the high seas is that every nation has an interest in ensuring that piracy on the high seas is kept to a minimum, and we get some rather aggressive actions against any kinds of pirates on the high seas that endanger international trade. But cyber bullying of and ransomware attacks on corporations is equally damaging in terms of the global supply chain, but does not receive quite the same degree of international cooperation because of the geopolitical intentions of both governments or governments all over the world in trying to further their espionage aims. And none of the large countries are innocent in that particular arena, and they just don't see it as a priority to come up with an international agreement. So we're certainly seeing that these hacks are affecting various portions of the commodity supply chain. And certainly today, there was quite a bit of volatility on the feeder cattle and live cattle markets, where they initially dropped but then recouped a good part of the decline. We see feeder cattle finding support in the region of the trend mean. It's been ranging below the $160 area for the last 4.5 years, and this looks like a bullish consolidation right now. Live cattle have also popped on from the region of the trend mean in here today. They've been also ranging for most of the last 4 years, and then because of the supply disruptions that have been going on in lean hogs for most of the last few years, we have this clear breakout. But there is an additional point I think is worthy of mention, and it's the cyclicality and the slaughter schedule that we tend to have with these, because usually prices rally in the first quarter of the year for lean hogs and then subsequently collapse. So we saw that this year, and then they just kept going. So this is clear evidence of a supply disruption, where the normal ebb and flow of the market, and certainly the big contract changes that signal the end of the slaughter, then when the prices continue higher after that, it's a clear sign that we are back in a clear demand-dominated environment. And it's been a long time. since we've had a trend in lean hogs that can persist for more than a year. So this is an extraordinarily lengthy ranging phase, which is deeply susceptible to cyclicality and seasonality. And now we're coming back into the region of the all-time highs. And that's as much about the global supply chain and swine flu as it is about these the impacts of the pandemic and the swine flu. Well, then when we then move on and look at other portions of the commodity complex, gold continues to hover here around $1,900. And so far, this is looking like just a mild consolidation. And we've had nothing but mild consolidations for more than 2 months. So this is still a very benign environment. We are in the region of where we've seen big downward dynamics in the past. So it's really an area where if we can see clear evidence of demand coming back in here and evidence of support coming through quickly, well, then that would be very bullish indeed. It would be, I think it would copper fasten the argument that we are back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. And certainly the downtrend has been broken. It's really only a question of how much of a consolidation we get before the trend is fully reasserted on the upside. Silver has continued to exhibit relative strength, and it's coming up towards the upper side of this range, but paused a little in here today. Platinum has got an almost identical chart pattern with also this clear first step above the base and holding the $1,200 area and the I think the more important break above the psychological $1,000 level for platinum. Palladium continues to exhibit relative strength, and it is right in the region of its all-time peaks and pausing around the 3,000 level, but it is being supported by continued outsized demand for motor vehicles, and that is certainly helping to support prices in the short term. When we then think about what's going on in the wider world, we can think about the S&P 500 and the fact that technology is beginning to weigh on the performance, and it wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its advance in here today and finished in negative territory. So a little bit of reticence to push on to pay new all-time highs in here today. But at least then the S&P is in the region of its highs and had broken out earlier in this year. The NASDAQ has been ranging for longer, and it hasn't quite been able to get all the way up to test the region of the highs. Then we can think about, well, what are the things that international investors own in the US market? And we'd have to think that it's the name or the household name companies that everyone's familiar with. And then we can think about the dollar. Well, one of the reasons why international investors invest in the USA is because they can get the currency, and they were getting a pick up on the yield or on the interest rate, and then they had the potential for capital appreciation as well. Well, they're not getting the capital appreciation in the NASDAQ right now. It's been going sideways for the last 4 months, and the dollar is right in the region of its lows and just barely steady now in the region of those lows today. And there's no interest rate differential to speak of any longer. And then you have the question about where's the next source of new liquidity going to come from? So we can certainly think that, or just we have clear evidence that the European markets, Chinese market, Indonesian, Malaysian, Australian, and all these markets are doing better than Wall Street right now. So the Europe Stock 600 is in the region of its highs. The Nikkei has continued to bounce from the 28,000 level. Then we can go back and think about the Chinese market, where it's bouncing from the region of the trend mean. The ASX 200 was making new highs last week. It was a little bit softer in here today, but this is only the beginning of a potentially lengthy period of outperformance of ex-US assets, and it's all really resting on the potential that we could have the dollar breaking on the downside. So whenever that happens, then not only will foreign investors eschew the opportunity that's presented by the US, but then US markets or investors will have a greater incentive to go off and find foreign assets to invest in. And we continue to see relative strength coming through in markets like Vietnam. The Philippine peso was quite firm last week, and then the Philippine stock market was steady in here today. So we're certainly seeing activity in emerging Asia, emerging Europe, and then developed Asia, developed Europe as well, and all on the back of this weakening dollar environment overall. Of course, then there are going to be the big companies, which have been largely going sideways for a while now, and the Amazon, for example, is hanging on in here, and it's been ranging for the better part of a year. And we have failed upside breaks, we've failed downside breaks. It has continued to find support in the region of the trend mean, but it was a massive acceleration. And now the big question is, where's the next catalyst coming from? What is the threat from antitrust? And are we going to see the price breaking downwards? So these are, I think, important considerations. And when you're thinking, and I've been making this argument about Bitcoin, but when you have a market cap in excess of a trillion, you need a lot of new money coming in to move the price. And sometimes it's a lot easier to sell when there's a lot of demand than it is to buy and support those prices. So where is that additional new money going to come from to sustain these extraordinary valuations? Well, 10-year treasury yields were a little bit softer in here today and a little bit firmer right now. But the broader picture here is certainly more of a range. The big questions and the deflationary argument about that are supporting treasury prices at these levels is that a lot of the questions about the economy have not been answered. We don't know how they're going to unwind the moratorium on evictions, and we don't know how people are going to react to losing generous unemployment benefits, because they may not have been used to making more money a year ago, but they're certainly used to it now. So then will people simply go back to the way things were? I think that at least is unlikely. There are many other things in life that are going to go back to normal, but you cannot give people a taste of a better standard of living and then take it away and expect them or expect no pushback. And I think that is why yields are not rallying here. So it's going to be then the official response to any further unrest and the potential for even more printing that would send gold up and out of its range, and then also potentially for yields to really have a proper tantrum. And then we can think about Bitcoin. Well, it did get up to a market cap of a trillion, and it's subsequently almost halved, and now it is struggling to push back above the trend mean. And the number of crypto reports that are crossing my desk has multiplied in the course of the last couple of weeks. It seems like that investors are trying to support the argument for cryptocurrencies with word count. And it's I find it particularly interesting that everybody wants to get out and say buy the dip, but so far at least buying the dip's not working. And then of course we have this rehash of the Ethereum ascendancy argument. That's exactly what happened in the first couple of months of 2018. Bitcoin had started to pull back. Ethereum had peaked late. there was the anticipation that it would suddenly become the biggest of the cryptocurrencies and overwhelm Bitcoin, and then subsequently it crashed because we just are not yet at the point where there is a killer app, something that clearly says, I need to have this, and I can't do my business or I can't perform my daily routine without it. And until we get that app, then the I think dominance of Bitcoin will remain intact, and the high beta nature of the rest of the crypto world will also remain intact. And right now, Bitcoin is still quite weak. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.